Welcome to Comedians with Ghost Stories. I'm your host, writer, and comedian Emily Winter. And on today's podcast, I'm really excited to have a Pittsburgh comedian. And that is fitting because I am on my way to Pittsburgh tomorrow, Thursday, to perform at Don't Tell Comedy on Friday in Shadyside. And Saturday, One Liner Madness, the show that I take all over the country, will be at Spirit in Lawrenceville, and that's 64 comedians going head-to-head in a single elimination joke tournament, and one of those comedians is Zach Funk, who you will hear on today's episode. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you tell anyone you know in Pittsburgh. I really appreciate that, and I hope we have a blast on Saturday. It's always a really fun show, so if you are around, please come out. Cool. All right, enjoy the episode. Today on the podcast, I'm super excited to have comedian Zach Funk. Zach, welcome to the pod.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, I'm so excited. First of all, you're in Pittsburgh right now, right?
Yes, correct.
And that I will be in your town soon. I'm very excited. My dad is from Pittsburgh, so it has a special place in my heart. He will also be with me. But you, your story, you were telling me a little bit about your story before we did the pod, and it's wild. So I'm going to let you, I'm assuming it also takes place in Pittsburgh, or are you not from Pittsburgh?
No, I grew up. Up in central Pennsylvania in Lancaster County, like Amish country.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Not that one.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. So you take it away, Zach. Your story is wild.
Okay. All right. So growing up, my dad was pretty much my best friend as well. Like I remember having car rides where we'd be like essentially what I now realize as doing improv in the car. Like just joking around, kidding.
Just doing extended bits.
Yeah, exactly. He was an attorney, but he always wanted to be a writer. He was very like dry, funny, things like that. Helped coach my baseball teams, and we were just very, very close.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah.
What's the vibe out there in like Amish country? I mean, are you far away, like physically, distance wise, from like all your friends, or like what?
No. I mean, it's very much like. It's somewhere between the suburbs and being a rural area. For example, like, I think my graduating class of high school was like 300 people.
Okay.
But at the same time, it was, I think, 98-99% white.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of thing. Where I grew up, it's about an hour and a half west of Philly.
Okay. All right. So it's not like, it's not that there's nothing going on. There's people.
Yeah, there's people, there's things, but at the same time, also, like, at the high school I went to, you could opt out of taking science and take farming classes.
Oh, wow! So did you do that?
No, I have the opposite of a green thumb. I knew that by the time I was in middle school, I knew I would not, like, I love my family and I go back to visit people every now and then, but I knew I would not be staying there.
Okay.
Well, like, I remember, like, one of my good friends from growing up, is from the quote liberal side of his family because they use electricity.
Oh, whoa. So like your own family, people in your own family are they Amish?
No, not in my family, but my friend's family, has like the almost Amish, very strict Mennonite family.
Okay.
Like I remember him telling me going to a family reunion in high school, and no one would talk to him when he had a Game Boy out.
Whoa.
And that by ninth or 10th grade, they were already asking, when are you going to get married and start a farm?
Oh my God. That's sad to me.
Yeah. That's not the people. That's not the kind of people I grew up with. Like, right. That's not my family, but that's the area I grew up in.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, not that the whole thing is sad, but just that, like, oh, I wish kids could be kids everywhere, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm don't get like we need farmers, we need agricultural people. It's just not for me. And it's a very close-minded area, very conservative area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is also not me. My dad grew up closer to the Philly area.
Okay.
Like half hour, 40 minutes outside of Philly. He met my mom because my mom used to work for one of my dad's older brothers.
Okay.
My mom retired recently. She was a dental assistant. My dad's brother was a dentist. So she worked at my uncle's office and that's how they met.
Okay, great.
So we were always just really, really close. And then, One day when I was in fifth grade, I was 11. I had an absolutely just ridiculous day at school that has nothing to do really with so this will tell you more about the area I grew up in, because I would remember this day even if this weren't the day that my dad had died. It was so it's fifth grade, and at the school I went to, your options for lunch are like, oh, you can have lunch A, lunch B, or pack, and you had to tell them so they know how much to make and whatever. So I guess that day at lunch, they were like, to pay for your lunch, you had like lunch tickets, and I guess they were short one lunch tickets. So they're like coming around checking all the kids. Damn it, someone didn't pay for their food at elementary school, and rah! Yeah. And they can't find this missing ticket, so they ask a bunch of the kids to like stand up against the wall and empty their pockets. And
This
it's fit.
is insane. Just let it
Yeah.
go. Just let it go. Let a peanut butter sandwich go, you know?
Exactly. And it's fifth grade, so kids are starting to learn to be like a smart ass. So a few, so some of the kids in my class stood up against the wall in like the stop and frisk position, as a joke, and everyone laughed because it was funny. And then we, because they did that and everyone else laughed, we were not allowed to go out to recess that day. We had to stand on the stage of the cafegymatorium thing. If you
Oh
if you've seen it, just in you know, stand there quietly until it's time to go out.
no. Ugh.
So till go out to class. So it's 1996, which means that if you have a skateboard, you're probably on the drugs. And a kid in my class had taken his skateboard to school, and the school said you weren't allowed to have skateboards at school. So the principal, who had taken our fourth grade year off to go and get his doctorate in being a principal, and when he came back, he was the kind of pompous ass that like made the kindergartners call him doctor, which I'm sure was really confusing.
Oh my God, let it go. Oh, these ridiculous.
Yeah. So the principal decides he's going to bug this kid about having his skateboard at school while we're already all annoyed about that we can't go out to recess. And he starts questioning the kid, and the kid calls him like man. Like the kid doesn't raise his voice, like, hey man, lay back, kind of thing. And because he's now a doctor, he gets very upset. And the kid has glasses, and he presses down on the bridge of the kid's glasses with his finger and is like, I am a doctor and you will address me as such. Or something like that. That's the gist of it. Because I remember the next two things as direct quotes. So the kid just goes, get your finger off my glasses. And the principal picks the kid up with both hands by the neck, swings him into a trash can, while yelling, I'll rip your goddamned head off.
What?
Yes.
This is insane. So,
This
what did you guys all do?
so th this was public school too, like not like some private thing. So we're all just standing there kind of shocked, and then he turns and looks and realizes he just did this in front of like 40 kids.
And probably a teacher, right?
No, there were no teachers there.
Ugh, so annoying, but yeah.
And he just goes like, kids, what I just did was wrong, and you shouldn't do things like that, and you can go out to recess. So we all go outside, and I was always a weird, like overly intellectual kid. I like to make the joke that like I got up with the same excitement to watch cartoons on Saturday as I did Meet the Press on Sunday, like that kind of thing.
Precocious, a word
Yeah.
that I thought meant a horny child, only within the last couple of years. I think I said it at some point, or somebody said it, and I was like, oh my God, that kid is horny. And my husband was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, precocious, it means a horny child, right? No, that's not it. Anyway, you were precocious, the correct intellectually curious child. Yes.
Yeah. So while we're outside at recess, I start talking to the kids. And now that I have the terminology, it seems like I was trying to organize a walkout.
What were you
Like,
saying?
I was telling other kids, like, this isn't okay. And we should, none of us should come to school tomorrow at a protest. And like I said, my dad was an attorney. He had been a public defender and ADA. And then around the time I was born, he wanted to be able to like have time for his family, so he just did like small family law stuff. But I still had a fifth grade understanding of like my dad's a lawyer, so I'm like, my dad's a lawyer, and I'm going to talk to him, and the principal can't get away with this.
What were the other kids' reactions? This is really funny and cute.
Yeah, everyone was just kind of like, there was a lot of like, okay, whatever, great.
Yeah, you're like, that's over. Let's just move on with our lives.
Yeah, like I want to go swing and play dodgeball,
Yeah.
that kind of thing. So, we go back to class, the school day ends, and I go home. So I was in fifth grade, my sister was in kindergarten, and she would get babysat about a block up the street after school. Because I was old, I was old enough to be home by myself for a little bit, but my
Not
sister was still young,
yeah.
that kind of thing. And my dad would get out of work around like 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then he'd always call and say, "Hey, I'm getting into work. Walk up the street to go pick up your sister." And that day, my dad didn't call. And like, well, that's weird. But again, sometimes you get held up at court. These things happen. And it's like it's 96. He had a beeper, but.
Yeah, you couldn't he yeah, he couldn't text you and tell you, yeah.
Yeah. And then it got to be about 5 o'clock and my mom got home. And that was like, okay, that's weird. Mom never makes it home before dad.
Yeah.
And was like, all right, whatever. Go get my sister. And then I'm in our next door neighbor's driveway, shooting basketball with their kid and the kid's dad. And they're, old friends of ours. We still keep in touch with them. And then all of a sudden, I see these two cop cars pull up to my family's house.
Oh God.
And I try to run inside, and the neighbor's dad, stops me. Then the neighbor dad stops me. I see the police walk inside, and I just hear my mom screaming, the worst scream I've ever heard.
Oh my God.
And then about she must have called my uncle, my dad's little brother, who knew the reason they met. My dad was one of six kids. And then they eventually let me back inside, and my uncle sits me down and tells me that there was a car accident and my dad had died, they believe on impact.
I'm so sorry.
And then I missed school for 2 weeks, so I never got to find out what the next day was like after the principal choked me out.
I'm sure that kid probably appreciated you in some way, you
I
know?
don't know. And I've always had these weird feelings about I try to be very kind to people because I know life's so hard. I've dealt with depression since before my dad died. And I take a weird comfort in knowing that like, okay, good, I had that problem before. Like that made it worse. But and I have this weird thing with like performative kindness when people don't really mean it. It's like, well, you're supposed to be nice because this bad thing happened to someone. And I can remember like having my teacher have all my classmates make construction paper, like sympathy cards. And it's like, oh, you're the bully. You would pick on me every day, but now my dad died. So now you feel bad. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That
Did you
kind of thing.
kind of did you feel that that was bullshit then
Yes.
when it happened? Yeah.
Yeah. So again, to go back to the precocious thing, a day or two later, they sent the school district psychologist or counselor or whatever to my house, talked to my sister and I separately. I forget which one they talked to first. My sister, like I said, that was in kindergarten. So I can understand asking this question to a kindergartner. But I was in fifth grade and I was overly intellectual for a fifth grader. So the school grief guidance counselor, whatever, sits me down. And the first question she asks me is, do I understand what it means that my dad is dead?
Oh my God, that's really condescending for a 10-year-old, even one who's not particularly advanced.
And so I looked her in the eyes and I told her not to patronize me. And the look on her face, I will never forget, because it was just that thing of like, oh my God, this kid's going through the worst thing ever. And he just told
What did she say?
I don't remember. She was just kind of like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Like she was just very, not what she expected. So, anyway, my dad dies. Life goes on. It's one of those things where we never found out what caused the car accident. He was driving, we think, from court back to his office. And his car just drifted in the other lane and hit a garbage truck head on. We don't know.
Oh my God.
And yeah, so we don't know if he had like fallen asleep or got distracted or tried to reach for something or, you know,
whatever,
what.
some wheel problem. Yeah. And your
Yeah.
brain, I'm sure, is going crazy about this for a long time.
Like I didn't get my driver's license until I was either 18 or 19. Because it took me about 2 years to get over having a panic attack at the thought of driving. Because every time it was, oh, I'm gonna make the same mistake my dad made and I'm gonna get killed. So I'm a very cautious driver still. But and there have been things over the years where when it comes to the topic of like ghosts and the spiritual or anything like that, I generally identify as agnostic. I went to church as a kid with my dad, went to a Lutheran church, but it was always kind of like, just be good to people. If you're good to people for religious reasons, great. Otherwise, just be good to people.
Yeah,
It
if
was
you're
never
not
dog.
into it, just be nice and we'll still, you're fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it was never like dogmatic. And I remember it never really made sense to me as a kid. And there was a lot of like, well, it'll make sense when you're older. And then turns out it never did. And there have been times where over the years, like my mom and my sister have said, like they could feel my dad around. And I've never, ever had that feeling.
Yeah.
Or I had a good friend in college who said she was very sensitive to ghosts, spirits, things like that. And, you know, I knew we haven't seen her walk, so she doesn't live in Pittsburgh anymore, but, you know, she was my friend living in town for like 6, 7 years, and someone that you know well enough where, like, all right, unless they're a sociopath, they at least feel these things. They're not making this stuff up for attention.
Right.
So my stance on anything like that is if someone's trying to profit off it, especially, I'm skeptical. Because that's just my distrust of capitalism, I guess.
Yeah, fair.
But I don't think things are impossible. I like to say that I used to have this job working at a Lowe's hardware store, and I worked in the paint department. And the one day they're having me train this new guy, and I tell him, all right, you know, here's how to use the paint mixing machines, go grab a color chip off the wall, and we'll make a little thing of it just to show you how it all works. So he goes over the wall, grabs this green color, and says, here's a nice flesh tone. And I said, all right, either you're a Martian or you're colorblind. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm colorblind. So in the same sense that he had to trust that I could see that green and he couldn't, that's kind of how I look at the idea of like sensing things,
Oh,
feeling.
that's a beautiful analogy.
Is that just because I don't feel it doesn't mean it's impossible.
Right.
But until I feel or experience something, I am definitely going to be at least skeptical in many situations.
Fair. Also, I thought this may end up being a story about you meeting an alien. Well, like, I think
No.
your story, and like, okay, no, this isn't an analogy.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's kind of how I try to look at that kind of stuff is, you know, just because I don't feel it, I don't experience it, doesn't mean people are necessarily lying. You know, I believe my mom and my sister when they say they have felt my dad around. It's just something that I've never experienced. So, you know, life goes on. Eventually in 2011, I start doing stand up. And I remember one of my early goals in stand up was to talk about my dad's death in a way that wasn't just self-indulgent
Yes.
and like actually had material for it.
And you know, it's so hard to deal with grief and stand up when you don't have the skill set yet. Like when you're new and when you start,
Yeah.
you just don't have the stand up experience, but you have this like insane thing that happened to you and your family and you want to talk about it. So it takes a minute to get it
Yeah.
to nail it.
Yeah, and a lot of my comedy is very personal and very story-based. Like I talk a lot about mental illness and things like that and trying to like, you know, be funny but also like explain it and destigmatize it and things like that.
That's wonderful.
So I eventually wrote this bit that I'm really happy with how it came out, about, you know, when you lose someone in a random unexplainable accident, it sucks that there's no foundation for that. You know, if you know somebody that gets cancer, all right, I'm buying pink everything because I
Yeah.
care about my friend.
Oh, I get it. There's no like, yeah, organization. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like emotional foundation, but actual organization. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, you're the random accident club. Yeah.
Yeah. My dad was Richard Funk. So yes, my dad's name was Dick Funk. So the premise of the bit was I am now creating the Dick Funk Society for Shit Happens.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I it was a good way to talk about like that, you know, that feeling of not being in control of your life.
Did it ever feel like you were even less in control when your mom and your sister would say, "I felt him"? Like, did you feel left out of that experience?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's something that I certainly would like to, because like I like I said, I'm generally agnostic. I have friends that are very religious from various beliefs. And my stance has always been, if it helps you be a better person and you don't use it to hurt other people, great. You know, whether I think it's real or not. I remember having kids in high school threaten to beat me up because they found out I wasn't Christian, and then I'd tell them, hey, you know, Jesus was a pacifist, right? And then they'd be like, well, yeah, but you know,
They have nothing to say to that, like an
that
80s
kind of
movie
thing.
or something.
Yeah, it's very much the like there's this great Kurt Vonnegut quote about how, you know, like if what Christ said was good, doesn't matter whether if he was God or not. Like if it helps you be a better person, that's all that matters. So that's kind of how I try to live my life.
Also, he was the biggest advocate of kindness. That's his like number one message in
Yes.
everything.
Yeah. And I would point that out to people who were, you know, like, oh, screw these people, screw these people. The people that, you know, they treat everybody like crap, but they go to church on Sunday, so it's okay.
Oh, yes, I know. It makes me crazy. Any yes, it all makes me crazy. But
So I
I'm
had a lot
probably
of
doing it too in my own ways, and I don't even realize it, you know.
so I had a lot of combative issues with that in high school, being the person who was, you know, not trying to pick fights about stuff. I don't ever want to be the non-believer that's like, hey, you're wrong, blah, you know. But if you're a jerk about it, I'm willing to call you on your shit. So life goes on. And you know, I like I said, mental health is a really big aspect of mental illness, I should say, or mental health is a big aspect of my life. And I have a lot of mental illness on both sides of my family, that people don't really talk about, because both sides of my family were, you know, you don't talk about things that are problems.
Well, I mean, in Pennsylvania, and they're boomers. Like, I'm Midwestern progeny of boomers. Like, it's just you don't talk. Everything is against talking about it.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate that both of my parents, my dad when he was still here, and my mom since then, really did try to work to break that cycle, that say it was okay to talk about your feelings and, you know, that kind of thing. And that helped me so much and helps me help other people. Growing up in that thing, growing up in an environment where you're told, you know, it's okay to be a person.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, but it's still something I've always struggled with. I very thankfully survived what was basically a suicide attempt in college.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but good for you.
I mean, it was one of those things where I've always had insomnia problems. And when I was in college, my doctor gave me a script for Ambien, and eventually I built up a tolerance to it and started taking more. And the one night it was like, all right, either this will kill me or put me to sleep. I don't care. I'm just taking a few of these. And I ended up you know, surviving, obviously, but like I threw up black cram black, which means you have internal bleeding.
Oh, God.
And like I didn't tell anybody for months.
Wow. So how did you just recuperated on your own?
Yeah, like really, it was this thing of, you know, I was so messed up on the, because you're not thinking straight, you're on Ambien. So it was, you know, I had that thought like, all right, again, I just want to stop. I like to describe it as someone closing their eyes and running across a highway. They don't know for sure they're going to get hit by a car, but there's a good chance. So, you know, I took the stuff I took, eventually fell asleep. I think I woke back up like maybe 20 minutes later and I felt like I had to throw up. So I go to the bathroom and I throw up again, like black crayon, like everywhere. I found out the like medical, not official medical term, but like the medical slang for that, they call it coffee grounds, because that's kind of what has like the consistency of that and looks like that.
Oof.
And then because I was just so messed up, both from the pills and being depressed, I just went back to bed. And the next day, woke up and I was like, all right, I can taste vomit. Definitely threw up. But I'd heard stories about people hallucinating on Ambien as well. So the denial stuff kicks in. Oh, there's no way through a black. That can't happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember getting it all in the toilet, and I did not get it all in the toilet. So I just like, oh no, definitely. Okay. I threw a black. And
yeah, there was evidence.
And then, yeah, like I said, I had my own dorm room, so I didn't, you know, I was able to clean up and hide it. And I just didn't tell anyone for months. I mentioned that. Just for more kind of general family history stuff for both myself and outside. So in during the COVID lockdown, my sister, I will describe as not religious, but spiritual in the same way of, like I said she can feel things around and things like that. So she finds out from a cousin on my mom's side, whose dad died in an accident as well. That she had talked to some medium and she was like a really good person to talk to. And they had, you know, basically she thought they really had channeled like her father.
Okay. Yeah.
So my sister schedules a Zoom appointment because it's COVID.
Right.
With this lady. And my mindset had always been, you know, I knew my dad had some mental illness issues. Just because everybody in my family does.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it being a suicide via car accident would have been a logical explanation. But I never believed that would have been the truth. Like, okay, it's possible, but I don't believe it. That was what would have happened.
And why? Because that just wasn't the narrative or.
It well, because there were so many things that like we had planned already.
Okay.
In the sense of like the next month we were going to do this, like my school was going to do this like week, like 3 day, like you camp and learn about nature and blah, that kind of thing. And
yeah.
Like my dad had volunteered to chaperone that.
Yeah.
And we were getting ready. It was the beginning of April. So we both loved baseball and we were getting, and I played baseball and he would help coach my team. So we were talking about the new baseball season starting and what we're going to do about that. And
so it feels like a pretty uptime. Yeah.
It does not feel there was enough concrete things that, you know, it didn't feel like this was someone like checking off things to do before they go.
Right. Okay.
Because my very overly analytical mind was always just like, okay, that would be an explanation, but I don't think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister, though, tells me she never questioned it. So she does this Zoom session with this medium lady. And according to my sister, she said something felt compelled her to ask, was it really an accident?
Mm-hmm.
And the medium said it was not.
Wow.
So my sister, I don't know how the rest of the conversation goes, but my sister holds on to this for like a few months, is questioning things, doesn't tell anybody. And then the one day in 2021, in like late February, she just is kind of like, fuck it, and confronts my mom about it.
Yeah.
And my mom told her the truth that, my dad's death was a suicide. Oh. And that he had left a suicide note and a letter that only my mom and my uncle knew about for 25 years.
Oh my God. How? Where did he leave it? Like, what?
I think he left it in, like, the dresser, from what my mom said. And, the gist of what they told me, because eventually they kept the letter for a while, but eventually they destroyed it because their thought was they had no plans on ever telling anyone because that was one of the things he requested.
Okay.
He requested my mom not even tell anybody. My uncle wasn't supposed to know, but my mom had to tell somebody.
Yeah, fair.
He didn't really give an explanation other than he just felt something was broken in him that was unfixable.
Oh, that's so sad. So relatable.
So I don't know if it was just mental health or if he was having like identity issues or you know, who knows what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep meaning to, it's such a weird thing to bring up, to talk to my family and be like, hey, I know you destroyed the letter. Can you describe what you remember? Because I really want to know. Because I'm just one of those people like, yes, give me the information. Even if it's bad information, I want to know.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's little things they said And he, in one point, I guess he even said in the letter, because like I said, I remember my mental health issues starting before his death.
Mm-hmm.
That he, I guess, even said, like, make sure I get taken care of because he sees issues in me that he recognizes in himself.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's scary to learn. You're like, no.
Which, I mean, it didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It makes it more complicated knowing that he could recognize that I had those issues. And like I'm never going to be one that says, you know, as someone who has survived a suicide attempt, I talked my first person out of suicide in 10th grade. I've done that for about five people now. And when I say like talked, I mean like in 10th grade, going to my friend's house at 2 a.m. to convince him to let me take him to the hospital.
Oh my God. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, the thing is when you deal with mental illness and grief from very young age, you're either going to become really compassionate or really bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I'm fortunate that I got the compassionate side.
Well, it's also partially a choice, you know.
Oh, definitely it is. Yeah, there's the thing of you can when you feel that suffering, you can say, you know, I know I can't totally stop it, but if I can help make things better for other people, like years ago, I had this job at a group home. And taking care of intellectual disabled adults. That was my first job out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And you work a lot of temps at that job because it's super high turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And the one night I'm working with this lady, I'm going to say late 50s, early 60s. She was a temp, never saw her before, never saw her again.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole night she just looked really sad. And we were working till 11. And by like 8:30, all the clients were in bed. Everything was done. It's just wait out the clock and make sure like the house isn't burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, we're like, hey, I know I'm a stranger. So if you're not interested in this, no offense taken. But like, you look like something's really bothering you. And we've got nowhere to go. So if you want to talk, I'm glad to listen. And it turns out her sister had died like 3 days before.
Oh, and that's so sweet of you to bring that up, to ask, you know?
Yeah, so we talked about like grief for 2 hours. And then, you know, when the shift was done, she told me that she thanked me and she told me that she thought God had sent her to that house that night to work so she could talk to me. Like, that's how much it meant.
Oh, my God.
And again, whether I believe that's the case or whether we randomly happen just to work together, I'm glad I could help someone in a rough time.
Yeah.
You know, we can't be it's not a thing about like being martyrs. We can't all save the world or anything like that. But the idea of just putting aside your petty human bullshit and recognizing that life hurts.
Yeah.
Is very important. So.
Does it make you feel when you learn this and now you've had a couple of years to marinate on this information about your dad, does it make you feel differently about him?
Very much so. Yeah. I have really conflicted feelings. I am so thankful for the person that he was and the influence he had on my life. It's a weird thing to say. I don't have any bad memories of him. Now, I understand that could also just be a matter of, you know, the brain chooses what to remember. And when you lose somebody like that, it's not going to hold on to the bad stuff. And as someone who understands mental illness on a very personal level, my heart breaks for the guy. But at the same time, as his son, I have a lot of anger.
Yeah, fair.
For doing that to my mom, to my sister, to me, the fact that he recognized I was dealing with these things and still chose to do that.
Yeah.
You know, the angry part of me, the best way I can sum it up is, whatever was going on inside him, he hated himself more than he loved us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I don't question.
He couldn't think clearly enough to put the priorities in order.
Yeah, and I know my dad is somebody, what was somebody who was very meticulous. Like if we took a family vacation, it was like, all right, here's the itinerary, here's the plan.
Okay.
He kept journals. He was not good at impulsive things.
Mm-hmm.
Which also then, you know, there's a difference between like, okay, the house is empty, I'm going to shoot myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and causing a car accident, staging a car accident effectively later in the day and leaving a note, because that also means he had the entire day to change his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he could have endangered other people by doing it that way too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I said, as you know, intellectually, my heart breaks for him, but the emotions, I have a lot of anger.
Do you feel like, I mean, I guess my reaction to that is that's good and normal. That's okay. You know?
Yeah. Like, that's how I feel.
Trying to get rid of that, or no, do you feel like that can hold both things?
I'm generally good at holding contradictory ideas. Like, you know, two contradictory things can both be true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I'm at. And you know, I'm not a person that likes being angry. I don't like to hold on to anger. Like my sister at this point says she isn't angry anymore, and that is, you know, I'm very happy for her. And my mom says she's not angry because at least my sister and I are still here. And you know, she's told me that like they, like 2-3 years before he died, they had like a really rough year, but the last year of his life, like their relationship was at the best it had ever been practically. And so, you know, she wonders if that was, had things gotten better, or he just made up his mind and it didn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe he saw like the light at the end of the tunnel, and so he could appreciate the things around him for knowing that the end was in sight, that there wouldn't be like tons and tons of pain to go through.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of different things.
Does this change your... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You first.
Does this change your idea or your relationship to spirituality, knowing that your sister got this information out of a medium on Zoom?
It definitely complicates it. And I've worked this aspect into a stand-up bit as well. talking about... So when I talk about it on stage now, first it starts off like, you know, we all learned a lot about ourselves over COVID. You know, for example, I found out the car accident my dad died in when I was 11, was actually a suicide. And I am so thankful that I learned that when I was on unemployment.
That's great. Yeah.
Cause otherwise before that, I'd still been working at Lowe's. And so I wrote this bit about like, imagine trying to like make that call off of work at a big box retail hardware store, being like, oh yeah, hey, it's Zach. I mean, did I offer to, I just found out my dad killed himself. When 25 years ago. No, I knew he was dead. No, it's not that. No, you know, you're putting me on hold. Don't put me on hold. And they put you on hold, and Cats in the Cradle starts playing, and then they get back to you and they're like, oh yeah, sorry, there's nothing in the HR book about old family secrets, you have to come in tomorrow. And you know, then word gets around work and some well-meaning person gets you like a sympathy card, you know, and it's Garfield, and the outside of the card says, so you have to recontextualize 25 years of childhood trauma. And then the inside of the card says, but at least it's not a Monday. and then I'll further explain on stage the whole thing of like, and this didn't come up because my family decided it was, you know, time for my sister and I to know. This came up because my sister talked to a medium online. So now not only do I have to recontextualize my entire past, I have to figure out, did someone online get a 50-50 guess right, or are ghosts real?
Oh no, there's God.
Yeah, like it's like, oh great, now I have to figure out like I've got the personal things and the existential things. This is exciting.
Right. Good thing there's a 3-day weekend coming up.
Again, very thankful I was on unemployment at the time.
That
was kind of that whole thing of and my sister has told me she still has the medium's info, and she said if she ever want to, she'll be glad to even pay for my session if I ever want to talk to her. And I've definitely thought about it. And it's one of those things where I try to have a somewhat scientific mind to things. Like, again, when it comes to the idea of belief in ghosts, outside of the I've never felt anything, one of the things that keeps me from being 100% this is impossible, is the law of conservation of energy. Is that, you know, energy cannot be created or destroyed, it only changes. And our brains are just electricity and mush. Like, we don't understand how consciousness exists. There's no real explanation for it. So if energy cannot be created or destroyed, when we die, that energy has to go somewhere. Does that energy have form? Does it have consciousness? I have no clue. But that's also one of the things that keeps me in the, like, all right, I don't think it's entirely impossible, but again, anyone trying to make money or promise, if you do this, you'll get into heaven, or if you do that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's anytime, you know, belief and hope is used to manipulate people, I'm going to have a problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, when hope is a business, then that's scary.
Yes, exactly.
But I think this is, like, so interesting. Yeah, talking to somebody who is, you know, sort of open but not that into it, and then to have this medium sort of rock your world is pretty wild.
Yeah, it is ludicrous. If my life were in a movie or a story, I'd be like, no, there's no way that actually
happened. Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, this has been an amazing podcast. So, and was there anything else that you want to talk about before we do?
No, I mean, that kind of covers that stuff. I guess I'm still working on the bit, still refining it. It's crazy to think. So in 2019, I recorded my first album called Brains Are Weird. You can find it all over the place online. Okay. And the old jokes about my dad's death are on my album. And it's crazy to think that I have to update those jokes and, like, retract those jokes. Being like, oh, sorry, turns out new information.
you're like, I would have been a topical news writer if I would have known that I was going to have to update jokes about dead people.
Yes, exactly. and so if I ever do a second album, I'm just thinking I can somehow address that. And I also think that that idea is going to, if I ever do a second album, is going to, I think I've already decided on a title if I ever do it.
What is it?
So there's a Karl Marx quote that, you know, it's right there by saying quoting Karl Marx is really going to endear myself to conservatives, I know. But he says, like, he comments on, I think it's the philosopher Hegel talking about history repeating itself. Marx says what he failed to say is history repeats itself first as tragedy, second as farce. Mm. And that's kind of how I feel about losing my dad two different times now. Is that I had the tragedy, and then I had the global pandemic online psychic media.
And you're like, come on.
Yeah. So if I ever do another album, especially because that would be my second album, I think my second album, if I ever do one, will be called The Second Time as Farce.
I love that. Oh. And even an intellectual title. That's wonderful. Well, Zach, plug anything else you would like to plug, socials or whatever. And...
Yeah. So you can find me online at letter Z, Funkyeha, Z Funk. Yeah. Like, fuck yeah, but, you know, different. Also, I am the co-host, usually the co-host of a YouTube channel that my roommate, one of my oldest friends, runs called Is It Worth a Sandwich? which we don't do a lot of sandwich episodes lately. But so my roommate at 38 is my old college roommate, because life is secular sometimes. And when we were broke college students, you'd have those nights of, like, all right, I can eat dinner or I can buy, like, a $7 used PlayStation game. So that became our metric of, like, whether something was worth your time. Is this worth a sandwich? Would I be better off, like, watching this movie or having a sandwich or that kind of thing? So that's what this channel is named after. So we do a lot of gameplay videos. We make original nerdy themed cocktails because he and I both work at different Pittsburgh-based distilleries. So we have a lot of fun. Like, we'll pick a movie or a TV show we really like and make cocktails inspired by characters or props or things like that.
What distillery do you work at?
So the one I work for is called Wiggle Whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, unless you're in Pennsylvania or Washington, D.C., we can't ship to you because Pennsylvania alcohol laws are like that.
Okay.
It's weird. We can ship to D.C. because D.C. is not a state.
Oh, that's so interesting. I never thought of that. But I'll be in town soon, so I'll have to check out some Wiggle Whiskey, especially knowing that you can't get it anywhere else, you know, like Spotted Cow in Wisconsin.
And then, yeah, otherwise, I think that's all the stuff I have to plug. Just if you're listening, if you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling, you know, suicidal, the thing that I try to remind myself when I have those things, because it's something I know I will struggle with it my entire life. It's just, it's you know, it sucks, but it's just, it's part of what it is. So the thing I like to remind myself, and I remind anyone else, is I don't like the phrase "it gets better," because "it gets better" to me implies things will stay better. Mm-hmm. And that always bothered me, because I had all these people after my dad's death. Oh, things are going to be fine. It's going to be it's like, oh no, it's you know, there's a new normal.
Right.
So what I like to remind myself and other people is now is not forever.
Yeah.
Things will change. They might get better. They might get worse. I promise nothing.
Right.
But how you feel today is not necessarily how you will feel tomorrow. And the only way you're going to find that out is if you're still here.
That's so beautiful.
So just, you know, talk to your friends, talk to, you know, there's numbers you can call. There's people in your life that love you. You are human and you matter. So, you know, if you're anyone out there listening that deals with mental health issues, just keep fighting the good fight, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much, Zach. This has been, I'm so happy to have talked to you today.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Comedians with Ghost Stories. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. It helps people find it. And as great, it also helps me survive another day in this hard world. If you want to throw me a follow, I'm at Emily MC Winter on Instagram and Twitter. Have a great day.